Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Hell's Kitchen when we come back. Well, during the 1970s, an obscure black college professor down at Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, he was working on a grant. He developed a unique marketing plan for agricultural products. The plan was aimed at poor, rural black landowners in the South who owned small acreages, 25 acres or less. And the goal was to keep these landowners on the land by producing produce for sale to the public at retail and to generate an income that would support a family. Well, it's called the Whatley Program, and this Whatley Program was so successful that it became known as the Whatley Program, how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. And that man's name was Professor Booker T. Whatley. Now there are more than 4,000 of these little small family enterprises operating all over the United States. 4,000 of them. And the law school has taken the Whatley Program and then added the 15 agricultural laws of the Bible and the 17 financial laws of the Scripture so that you can practice all of the laws of the United States, practice all the laws of your state, and all the laws of the Scripture, and make a good living for you and your family at the same time. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how to do that, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, our school on $100,000 on 25 acres or less is also available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine, send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about a book. We're reviewing a book here called Hell's Kitchen by Dr. Joel Wallach, W-A-L-L-A-C-H. It's about a 1 in 100 book. You're going to read about 100 books before you'll find another one like this one. And it's so good. It's so good. I said, well, I'm going to review this book. And I read the whole thing. It's about a little under 400 pages. And written superbly. Only Wallach can write like Wallach writes. He's kind of like a Tom Sawyer, you know. It was one of those kind of stories, kind of a gripping story as he goes through using reason, logic, and common sense, statistics, and analysis. It's a health book. So, you know, in case you're wondering, it's a health book written by a naturopathic physician. He's also a veterinarian. That's what makes him so unique. He's a vet. And he points out that in animal husbandry, we can't afford cows that have diabetes. We can't afford to put our cattle on dialysis. I mean, we got to make a profit with these critters. And so when a cow develops diabetes or has to be put on dialysis, we just send them off to the butcher shop and we butcher them, you know, eat them. Now, humans are a little different than that. You know, you get diabetes or you get some kind of a disorder, and we spend thousands and thousands of dollars trying to fix you again. And it never works. I mean, you know, there's no cure for cancer, heart attack, stroke. They're talking about these magic cures over here, stem cell research and one thing and another. The better solution to this is to preserve your liver. Mickey Mantle tested it. I mean, he went out and he screwed up his liver. He drank a little extra, you know. And when you drink a little extra, it puts a tax on your kidneys and your liver and vital organs. And so he had a liver transplant. He lasted about 6 months. Spent $500,000. Got an extra 6 months of life. Cost him about $100,000 a month. Now, you can do it a lot cheaper than that. Now, you know, a heart and liver transplants and so on. Those are expensive things to get. I don't want to downgrade the technological achievements of modern medicine, but, you know, there's just no substitute for your own liver, and if you could maintain your own body organs, you'd probably be a lot happier with that. And Joel Wallach is the guy to show you how to do that. And it's very simple. You need to eat more ashes. Eat more ashes. In fact, you take those wood ashes out of your stove, mix them with some salt, put it on your steak, and you'll live longer. And the people around the world that do that, and we Americans, when we did that, we lived longer, and we had less disease. And so in the last program, I pointed that out to you, that where we have the Pima Indians on one side of the border in Mexico and another side of the border over here in the United States, here in the United States, they have a high incidence of diabetes, a high incidence of obesity. On the other side of the border, they don't. And so you look at the Mormons, you look at the Adventists, you look at the Hunzas, you look at the people around the world, and there are certain groups of people that don't have the same kind of problem. So we take a look at them, and what is it that they're doing different from what we're doing? They don't eat Wonder Bread. That's one of the things. They don't drink Coca-Cola, and they don't eat Wonder Bread, and they don't eat at McDonald's. And they live longer, and they're healthier. Now, if you just can't give up your Big Macs, that's fine. But, you know, I think that if you would eat more minerals, you'd eat fewer Big Macs. That's a fact. And I'm not sitting here saying, you know, that foodless food is no good for you. For instance, I had some cookies the other night with chocolate chip cookies and milk. God, they were good. Really good. But, you know, as I was eating each one of those cookies, I said to myself, foodless food, junk food, foodless food. They really taste good. Now, I like to have little treats once in a while. And chocolate chip cookies are just kind of real neat. Now, sitting here on my desk, I've got a container here of Newman's Own Organic California Raisins. And so, you know, between programs, I'll reach in here and I'll pull out these raisins. Now, if I was to tell you what my druthers are, I would druther have a Hershey bar or a Milky Way or something like that. But, you know, once in a while I'll splurge and I'll have a Hershey bar or a Milky Way. But I'm not totally stupid. I can recognize that these organic raisins probably are better for me than a Hershey. And so I satisfy my cravings. Now, these raisins also have more iron in them. Now, if these raisins were grown in an orchard or a vineyard, in this case, in a vineyard, where the land is deficient in vitamins and minerals and nutrients and so on, then these raisins are going to be deficient in it also. So I'm not sure that I can get all of the vitamins and minerals out of my raisins. Now, they're organically grown, so that tells me a little part of the story, that what they're doing here is they're growing these grapes. Then they're trying to follow some principles, like maybe they're putting on some wood ash, maybe they're putting on some compost, maybe they're actually putting something on the ground over here that's good for the ground and good for the plants, which will then ultimately be good for me, but I can't count on that. So I also take mineral supplements, vitamin and mineral supplements. Yeah, it's worked out pretty good for me so far. And so I recommend that. I recommend it to my students, I recommend it to people on the air, or review books, and this is a book here that we're reviewing here that deals with nutritional deficiencies. And it's written in an interesting way. It's a fun book to read. And it tells us the answer to the riddle. So if you're overweight, or if you've got the munchies, and you're eating the ashes out of the ashtray, or you're chewing the paint off the walls, you've got pica. We've covered some of these symptoms and some of these causes. And then ultimately, you come down with Parkinson's disease. Now, there's a fellow by the name of Michael J. Fox. Nice guy. And movie star and all. Well, he's got Parkinson's disease. Now, some years ago, Mr. Fox took a contract with the NutraSweet company. And he was advertising this sugar substitute called NutraSweet. Now, Parkinson's disease, he may not be suffering from Parkinson's. He's got Parkinson's symptoms, but he probably has aspartame poisoning. That's probably what his problem is. Anyway, he's a great advocate here in the 2006 election cycle for stem cell research. Now, I'm sure that modern medicine and stem cell research is all good stuff, and I'm not criticizing him, but I'll tell you, you can keep all your stem cells over there. I'd like to hang on to my liver. If it's at all possible, I think I'll just keep the one I got. Don't want to trade it in for a new model, and I don't want any new stem cells. I just want to maintain my body at the level that it is, and for as long as I can. But now, Mr. Fox, he buys into this concept. It's the medical concept, and that is, if you get sick, that we need a drug. And so evidently he thinks that we're deficient in Vioxx, or we're deficient in Viagra. You know, people that can't have sex normally, they're suffering from a Viagra deficiency, and so they take Viagra supplements, and this Viagra, you know, solves their problem. We can do the same thing with cayenne pepper and minerals and vitamins. I mean, you know, I'm an old man, but I'm still sexually active. And when I say that, you know, sometimes students, they look at you like, oh, yes, they remind me of Judy Hartson. I'm going to go tell Mr. Witt, you know, do you know what that little Georgie Gordon is doing? And, you know, I was designed, I'm one of the few people that didn't evolve. Most people evolve, you know, from monkeys. I was a special creation. I got a guy over here designed me just the way I am. I work pretty good, too. And anyway, he gave me some instructions over here. He said, this is what you need to be eating. And so some years back, I started taking a look at that, and I said, yeah, I think maybe I ought to do that. And so I tested it, and it just worked like a shot. Just worked like a shot. Now, Joel Wallach is not a creationist. I think he's an evolutionist. And he believes in fairy tales. But, you know, some people believe in the evolution fairy tale, and some people believe in the Christmas fairy tale. Religious people, you know, they believe in fairy tales, too. Right, Christmas, Easter, New Year, you know. Fat doesn't kill and pork's good for you. You know, they believe in their theories, ideas and fairy tales. Well, anyway, Mr. Wallach comes along here, and he's got a chapter 10 over here called the Feedlot Syndrome. It's 10 pages, but hey, let me give you a little introduction here as to what he says. He says the glut of grain produced by worldwide peasant agriculture and large-scale commercial farming has resulted in a series of mixed blessings and the opening of a modern Pandora's box of new diseases. More food has allowed greater numbers of humans to proliferate, survive, and to flourish. However, without the necessary systematic programs of essential nutrient supplementation, hundreds of nutritional diseases have become epidemic. Many are pandemic, immune systems are compromised, and the appearance of unfamiliar diseases has produced mass misery, and extended drought has resulted in catastrophic famine. So let me underline something over here. It says essential nutrient supplementation. And Wallach's conclusion is you can't get enough food value out of your food, well, at least here in the United States, in order to keep your body functioning at the level it was designed to function at. And so it used to be when I was a kid, you know, we used to talk about healthful food, and Frank Rocha would say, it's got its strength. You know, this food has got its strength. And he meant that it was full of vitamins and minerals and that it was good, healthful, and nutritious food, which was probably true, Frank, because he had a pretty good garden, and he used to put all kinds of wood ashes on it, and he put all kinds of organic material on it. He had an organic garden. But today we don't do that, and so, you know, many of us are taking supplements, and, you know, more power to you. If you're taking supplements, you're probably on the right track. If you're not taking these supplements, and Wallach points out that there's 92 of them. See, I didn't know how many there were. I didn't know if it was 9, 11, 37, 26. But now, because Wallach told me, now I know it's 92. Now he goes a step further and he says, if you're missing any one of those 92, then you're going to have a deficiency disease. You're going to have some kind of symptom. So I mentioned Michael J. Fox, you know, this Fox guy over here. He wants health through stem cells. Oh, okay. Go get it. Leave me out. I'll just sit over here and watch and see how this works out for you. I think personally, I'm going to hang on to my own liver. I'll stay away from the medical doctors. It's about as far away as I can get. And then I'm going to see if I can maintain my body by eating the best possible food. So I mentioned to you, Noah, Newman's Own organic raisins here. I eat organic. I don't know whether Wallach does or not. I suspect he probably does. You try to eat as well as you can. Now, you're not going to be able to get very good food out of Safeway and Kroger's. So these supplements over here are going to be pretty important to you. Now, even though the Industrial Revolution and the electrification of the world and their subsequent financial and scientific prosperity lifted and advanced some human cultures to dizzy heights, there was a painful and costly worldwide price. Industrialization has spread poverty, unsanitary conditions, pollutions, degenerative diseases, for instance, obesity, diabetes, metabolic syndrome, osteoporosis, cardiovascular diseases, Alzheimer's disease, and the appearance of new infectious diseases like HIV, Ebola, Lassa, Marburg fever, and so on, that were historically isolated in the jungles of Africa and Asia. They're now efficiently spread by modern jet transportation far beyond the speed and distance capabilities of a mosquito or a fly. Now, one of the unexpected observations that visitors to the United States report is that rich people are skinny and poor people are obese. The lower your income, the fatter you are. One out of every four of the people with below poverty incomes is obese. By contrast, in households earning more than $67,000 a year, they show an obesity rate of 1 out of 6. Minorities show an obesity rate of 1 out of 3. All right, now why is that? See, poorer people eat poorer food. And they eat poor prepared industrialized food, you know, like macaroni and cheese. Now, I'm not opposed to spaghetti or macaroni and cheese, but, you know, poor people tend to eat more carbohydrates and less proteins. The more protein you eat and the less carbohydrates you eat, then the skinnier you'll end up being. Now, wealthy people tend to be more educated, and educated people tend to eat more protein and take more supplements when compared with the economically stressed. Now, I'm going to pause right here. I have never seen anybody that is poor or economically stressed that was lacking in money to buy Marlboros and Budweiser. In fact, I was in the get and go the other day filling up my tank, and this lady came in and she bought us over to the DX station. And she bought two cartons, not one, two cartons of Marlboros. That cost her, it was a little bit more. She bought a 12-pack. Two cartons of Marlboros and a 12-pack for $67. Now, it cost me about $87 or $88, I recall, to fill up my tank the other day. Gasoline's run about $3 a gallon. You know, you put in 30 gallons of gas, now in your car costs you $90. Used to cost 30, now cost you three times that, cost you 90. Now, I'm sure this lady wasn't real wealthy because she was in a pickup, a little rusted out pickup, Toyota or something like that, beat up piece of trash that probably ought to have been junked years ago, and she's still out here driving that. Now, she's got $67 for two cartons of Marlboros and a 12-pack of Bud Light. But she doesn't have any money for mineral supplements. And she was a little on the chunky side. No, folks. This argument that people don't have money for food is just nonsense. Here in America, we spend about 20% of our wealth on food. I mean, most people in the world are spending half, 50% of everything they create and produce goes to food. 3 billion people in the world live on $2 a day or less. Half the people in the world are living on $2 a day. Well, yeah, you can do that in Uganda or Rwanda, but you can't do that in Arizona. Sure you can. You can live on $2 a day. And you can probably live pretty well on $2 a day if you knew how to eat. You know, if you were eating pinto beans and cornbread, you'd be a lot better off than smoking Marlboros and drinking Bud Dummer or something like that, you know. Now, if one disregards all other considerations, the bang for the buck when it comes to calories out of the grocery store is carbohydrates. So a high carbohydrate, high sugar foods are cheap, tasty, and they fill you up, and they're commonly available. In 2004, the University of California at Berkeley reviewed the diet of 4,700 adults, and they found that soft drinks provided more than 7% of the average daily adult intake of calories. Did you get that? Here's the University of California, prestigious institution. They take a look at 4,700 adults. They found that soft drinks provided 7% of their intake of calories. The largest single source of calories in the American diet comes from soda pop. Together, soft drinks, alcohol, and sweets, candy, including pastries, account for more than 25% of adult calories. Now, think about this. Soft drinks, beer, candy, pastries, account for 25% of the average American adult's calories. There ain't anything there with any nutrients. No minerals and vitamins. Now you got plenty of calories and they make you fat, but you don't have any nutrients, which is the thrust of this book to start with. That's why it's called Hell's Kitchen. Look at what you people are eating. They go on to say that 28% of Americans live in what is referred to as a food desert. Urban zones where grocery stores are a 20 to 30 minute drive away. People simply go to the local convenience store, even though prices are higher and the availability of fresh foods is lower. Now, the city of Philadelphia initiated a $100 million project to build 10 supermarkets in the hoods. I guess that's the neighborhoods, because you have people who are literally distanced out of healthy diets, says Troy Blanchard. He's a sociology professor from Mississippi State University. I noticed this. I got to pass this one on. Here's my racist statement for the day. Down in Oakland, California, the last Safeway store out in the avenues was on Bancroft, as I recall. Out, oh, maybe a couple of avenues east of Lake Merritt. And they closed the Safeway store. The Safeway there. Now, this is black neighborhoods, and this is all blacks. And Safeway closed up their last supermarket. Now, black people have to eat just like white people, don't they? And so, I couldn't figure out why, so I kept reading the article. They closed the store because the shoplifting rate was so great they couldn't turn a profit. Let me repeat that. In a black neighborhood, they had a big supermarket. See, Oakland, you know, one time was white. Then it turned black about 1970. And here's the Safeway store, which is the last Safeway store in the avenues east of Lake Merritt. And they closed it because the shoplifting rate was so great. I told you about this lady the other day. There's no shortage. Poor people have no shortage of cigarettes and beer. They may be short in education. Maybe they don't know what they should be eating and what they shouldn't be eating. I'm not here to critique poor people and their diets. I'm here to review a book. But here, wealthy people tend to be more educated, and educated people tend to eat more protein and to take more supplements when compared with the economically stressed. So in Philadelphia, which is about 100% black, 90% black, The city spent a $100 million project to build 10 supermarkets out in the neighborhood. I can tell you how that's going to come out. They're all going to lose money. And that's because the black people in those neighborhoods are going to steal from those stores until, well, either they got to be subsidized forever, or else they'll go out of business because they can't make it. That was what I observed there in Oakland, California. This is why, you know, basically you got to start off with thou shalt not steal. You got to start educating people to theft. You got to start educating people to thou shalt not commit adultery. You know, in this country, we used to have a moral people. It didn't used to be divided, blacks and whites. People, no matter what their color, practiced the Ten Commandments. But in the black community, starting about 1900, which, by the way, they were better off in 1900 than they are today because they weren't dependent upon the government made all these minority people dependent upon the government. And they have divorced morality from our public schools. And so all the black people, they go to public school. White people, they go to more prestigious public schools. In the white schools, they have a 50 percentile average. In the black inner city schools, it's 28 percentile. That's where we're educating these people so that they can eat more the foodless foods, and then they can steal more out of the stores, and we can ignore such, you know, trivia like thou shalt not steal, the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not commit adultery. You know, if you stop and think about it, morality has a lot to do with poverty. Do you know that? Well, think about it. Morality and poverty. Now, I drank a beer once in a while, but I spent my last $67 on Bud Thumper and Marlboro's. Now, that's another two poisons that you're putting into your body. In addition to starving your body of essential nutrients, then you come along and you start putting in some poisons on top of it. Now they went a little step further here. The preached and promoted remedies to obesity in America are very middle class, says Adam Drewnowski. He's the director of the Center for Public Health Nutrition and Nutrition at the University of Washington. They tell you, seek a healthy diet and exercise. Well, if you're working two jobs and living in a trailer, you're in no mood to get home and make a salad. So with all the statistics accumulated, with all the current business, political, and health interest in obesity, how can it be that we are the only ones who figured it out? Now, on the world stage, we have traded the reputation for being ugly Americans to being fat Americans. People from the other industrialized nations have gone from being Westerners to fat Westerners. This process of becoming fat gradually occurred over 50 to 60 year period as we shifted from wood stoves to electrical, gas, and propane kitchens. This fattening process was initially slow and insidious. No one paid much attention. After all, we were just well-fed Americans. However, something much more sinister than simply overeating and having made poor food choices has happened to us. Something happened that had guaranteed we were all going to get fat, and we had been placed in a virtual feedlot. American adults weighed, on average, 25 pounds more in 2004 than they did in 1960. American children weigh 9 to 10 pounds more today than they did in the 1960s. American teenagers weigh on the average 12 to 16 pounds more today than they did in the 1960s. And according to the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, which is considered the gold standard of assessing Americans' weight, 65% of Americans are overweight, and just going on a diet isn't going to work. Now, the survey statistics show that women aged 20 to 74 weighed on average 164 pounds in 2002 compared to 140 pounds in 1960. Men ages 20 to 74 weighed an average of 191 pounds in 2002 compared to 166 pounds in 1960. Children ages 6 to 11 weighed an average of 74 pounds in 2002, compared with 65 pounds in 1963. Boys aged 12 to 17 weighed an average of 141 pounds in 2002, compared with 125 pounds in 1966. Girls weighed an average 130 pounds in 2002, compared with 118 pounds in 1966. Now, Americans were placed in a classical feedlot environment, rich with a constant stream of dietary carbohydrate calories, low energy outputs, and a diet almost devoid of minerals, which ensured a ravenous appetite. The result is what we call the feedlot syndrome. I'm going to put a bracket around that paragraph. We have been placed in a feedlot. Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide on the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through our webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief in the Law Hour. And Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. But these endorsements and recommendations that we give do not mean that those publications and authors that we recommend and endorse are going to endorse and recommend us. Most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political. They may be religious. They can be economic. Sometimes they're sectarian or racial, and sometimes they're ethnic partisans. And we don't necessarily rubber stamp and endorse every viewpoint that we bring up here on the Law Hour. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book Hell's Kitchen, put out by Joel Wallach. I imagine his wife had a little bit of something to say about that, too. She's a medical doctor. He's a veterinarian and a naturopathic doctor. He's talking about longevity, obesity, diets, ashes, minerals, essential nutrients, wood and fire, cold, diabetes, metabolic syndrome, pica, the munchies, peat, feedlot syndrome, electricity, steam engines, and the Industrial Revolution. 21 chapters here in all. And it It has an overall thrust. The overall thrust is you should eat more wood ashes. Yeah, that's right. You should eat more wood ashes. And if you don't want to eat the wood ashes, well, then you need supplements, or you need to put the ashes on your garden so that you can get your nutrients out of your rutabagas and carrots and your Brussels sprouts. So here in this chapter, he's talking about the feedlot syndrome. Americans have been placed in a feedlot, and we're fed by our food industry. And our food industry is in the business of making profit. They're in the business of selling food. And so they're constantly promoting food. Eat, eat, eat. And that would be all right if we were eating Newman's Own organic raisins, but we're not eating Newman's organic raisins. We're smoking cigarettes, drinking beer. We're eating potato chips and pretzels. We're eating a lot of starches, a lot of carbohydrates, and we're not eating enough protein. And we're not getting the 92 essential nutrients or elements that we need, so we're turning into fat pigs on the feedlot. Because that's the name of the game. We are being fed. So if you want to get off that treadmill, the book is called Hell's Kitchen. You can probably get a copy of it from BraveNewBookstore.com. I know you can get one there because they're the ones that sent me this book called BraveNewBookstore.com. Pretty good outfit. Down in Austin, Texas, they got a phone number too. It's 512-480-2503. Again, that's 512-480-2503. That's Brave New Bookstore. Or they're online, bravenewbookstore.com. The price I got on here was $18.95. Probably plus a little shipping and handling. Well worth every dime. Every dime. If you had paid $100 for this book, it would have been worth $100. The information that you're going to get, and just the supplement information, just the information on the wood ashes is worth $100. And here on the air, you get it free. Now, a feedlot is a farm or a ranch. It's a factory operation designed solely for the purpose of intensive growing and fattening of animals for human consumption. Raising prime beef successfully requires a steady stream of carbohydrate, protein, and fat calories in the proper ratios specifically designed for fattening. The intense weight gain, high carbohydrate diet must be accompanied by optimal mixes of nutrients designed to encourage weight gain and drive the animal to eat with an endless and fervent hunger. Feed based on corn or other carbohydrates is made available on a steady stream. Beef cattle will grow from a 40-pound calf to 900 to 1,100 pounds in about a year under optimal feedlot conditions. Growth rates slow at about 1 year of age, and attempts to add more weight or fat become energy and economically inefficient as animals reach maturity. So as a result, animals are usually killed for meat at younger ages. Heavy beef animals that can reach over 2,000 pounds at slaughter produce large, prime, expensive steaks and are inefficient in terms of calories required to add the extra weight. Meat produced in a feedlot is specifically designed for prime or deluxe upscale dining. Meat produced in a feedlot is heavily marbled. It is thickly covered with fat. Feedlot meat is tender and very tasty. It is the form of meat that is demanded by discerning diners. Well, in 1920, Americans ate 165 pounds of red meat, poultry, and fish per person per year. In 2002, we ate 230 pounds of animal protein per person per year. So in 1920, we ate 165 pounds. In 2002, we ate 230 pounds. The calories in the modern Western diet, especially following the Korean War, primarily came from grain and carbohydrate-based meals, such as pasta and bread, dry cereals and potatoes, rice, soft drinks, fruits and juices. doctors demanded that people eat more carbohydrates and give up animal fat and switch to plant oils and margarines instead of using butter and lard. Americans dutifully complied with their doctor's instructions and joyfully climbed into the feedlot. Now, despite the healthful shift in eating habits dictated by the medical profession to a low-fat diet by 85% of Americans who revered their doctor's human weight began to go up at an ever-increasing rate. And as usual, Americans led the way. We became fatter more rapidly than anyone else because we had devised the most efficient feedlot diet, the seven food group diet called the pyramid. Now, the seven food group pyramid, which has been in vogue for the last 25 years, could not have been designed more perfectly to drive human weight up and our percentage of body fat up than if we would have tried. The seven food group diet, the feedlot diet as I call it, encouraged the consumption of 6 to 11 servings of carbohydrates every day as breads, pasta, potatoes, and grains, limited the consumption of fats, and didn't even talk about the need for supplemental minerals to eliminate deficiencies and to eliminate the munchies. Now, tragically, Americans immediately began to gain weight. And after all, we had been placed in the feedlot by the USDA, the FDA, and the medical profession. We Americans and individuals of other industrialized countries are fat because we have followed the misguided and ill-fated advice from the medical profession. Simply put, we are fat because we eat a lot. We eat a lot. Considerably more than humans have ever eaten before in all of history. And almost all of the added food is some form of carbohydrate. A perfect feedlot diet. And our hunger was driven to psychotic levels by mineral deficiencies. After all, we had willingly given up our traditional sources of dietary minerals to avoid kitchen drudgery, remember? Wood ashes were gone and fat bellies had arrived. All right, so we have a feedlot mentality here in America. The same types of food that we feed cattle in a feedlot for the express purpose of fattening them up is what we're feeding Americans today at McDonald's, Wendy's, and Burger King. A high-fat diet, high carbohydrate. And then we got to have a sedentary way of life. Couch potatoes, sitting on the couch. When I was a kid, you had to at least get up and walk across the room to change channels. You got a little bit of exercise just changing channels. We only had two where I came from. But you still had to get up and walk across the room to look at the other channel. Today you sit here and you push a button. You're sitting on your couch eating potato chips, sucking Coke, and pushing your remote buttons. And the food that we're eating is specifically designed to make you fat. And why is that? Well, fat people don't work as hard. Fat people sit on the couch and eat more. Fat people eat more than skinny people. It's evidenced by the fact that they're fat. And you're in the food business. You're in the business of selling more potato chips. So we got to get more people to eat more potato chips. How do we do that? We make those potato chips taste better. We put in MSG. We put in fat and salt. We put in all the ingredients that are going to make you come back. We're going to addict you to this product. So you'll come back over and over and over again. Buy that product over and over again. Now, we Americans and individuals of other industrialized nations are fat because we followed the misguided and ill-fated advice from our medical profession. We're following the advice of our doctors. Now, in 2004, adult women ate more than 335 more calories per day. 335 more calories per day than they did in 1971. That means that you got to work a little bit harder. Now, remember that 1,800 calorie plate? The woman, Lisa Rose, says you got to walk 18 miles to work off 1,800 calories. Well, it looks like 100 calories will run your body for about 1 mile. There used to be a time in America when we didn't get on these exercise machines. We went outside and worked. You got all the exercise you needed on your job. Maybe twice as much. But now, ladies, you're eating on average 335 more calories every day than you did in 1971. The greater female increase in calorie consumption is related to their monthly cycle. Blood loss, iron deficiency resulting in greater degrees of pica and the munchies than in males. On average, Americans ate 1,497 pounds of food per person in 1970. Personal consumption rose to 1,775 pounds per person by the year 2000. Let's take a look at how much that is. 1,775. And we'll take 1,497 off of that. 278 more pounds of food per person in a year's time. Personal consumption rose to 1,775 pounds per person per year by the year 2000. So if we're averaging an extra 300 pounds of food every year, well, then, you know, there's the answer to your riddle. But why is it that you want to eat more and more? It's that mineral deficiency. A superficial glance would indicate that it is a good thing because we're eating more vegetables, encouraged by the 1992 USDA food pyramid. However, about one-third of those vegetables are iceberg lettuce, French fries, ketchup, and potato chips. We humans were stampeded to eat more carbohydrates and less fat. We gladly followed the medical advice, and we ate more servings of grain. However, the grains we ate were primarily processed, and their white flour, such as pasta, tortillas, and hamburger buns, which essentially have the same food value as white sugar. And the whiter the bread, the sooner you're dead. I like that one. The whiter the bread, the sooner you're dead. If you were eating natural foods, your rice would be gray in color, not white. Your bread would be brown in color. It would not be white. Now, the reason that the average or the percentage of dietary fat is down in the human diet is not that we eat less fat, but rather that we eat greater amounts of carbohydrates. Now, the United States produces enormous amounts of corn, and we produce it so economically that Americans have become very creative at figuring out new uses for it all, including fuel to drive cars, fuel to produce electricity, plastics, and animal and human food. Our pet animals eat corn. Our livestock eats corn as high fructose corn syrup, and we eat and we eat and we eat more and more corn. Now, corn syrup is more economical than sugar. We Americans harvest 286 million tons of corn per year, driven by American industrial and agricultural policies. Well, about 57% of the American corn that is produced is fed to livestock, 5% is converted to high fructose corn syrup, which is more economical, sweeter, and easier to handle than agricultural granulated sugar, CNH. We have another form of sugar here called chemical sugar. Boy, that stuff's a killer. All right, now take a look here at what's being reported. We're eating more and more carbohydrates. We're eating about 300 pounds more food than we were 30, 40 years ago. We're fatter than we've ever been in our lives. 27% of us are obese. All right, now you add all of that together, and you want to make a change. Well, the way to make a change is to, first of all, get the book Hell's Kitchen. That's a dynamite source of information with the graphs and the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. Here's where the bodies are buried. Here's the cause and effect result. This is the only guy that I've ever heard say, the reason you're fat is because you're starving to death. Nobody comes to that conclusion. The reason you're fat is because you overeat and eat too much. You're a pig. That's what you're being told. It's not because you're a pig. You're overweight because you're starving to death. You're overweight because you're starving to death because you don't have minerals. 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 Got that? And it's not just here. From 1972 to 2002, the levels of sugar and syrup produced each year per American. It increased to 21%. From 100 pounds to 126 pounds. During that same period, the percentage of syrup sweetener in that total grew from less than 1% to 50%. Now, in North America, the U.S. states with the greatest obesity rates, Mississippi and Alabama are the southern states, the more active the supplement popping and outdoor-oriented affluent American West, Colorado and Utah, have the lowest rates of obesity. In South America, as Latin America transitions from third world economy to industrialization, which includes, by the way, electricity, natural gas, and propane, the marketplaces are filled now more and more with processed foods. They rose from only 20% of food sales in the 1980s to 60% in 2000. All right, now we can make a prediction now. Down in South America, they've increased their carbohydrate and their syrups and their processed foods from 20% to 60%. Now just watch over the next 20 years and you'll see that their obesity rate goes up just like ours. We're putting those people in a feedlot. Why is that? Well, because the business of the big food conglomerates is to sell food. In order to make more money, we sell more food to more people. In Europe, candy, fast food, and dry sweetened cereals make up more than half the food ads in 10 European Union countries. The UK alone increased their snack food consumption 25% in 5 years. Africa. In many parts of Africa, obesity is diagnosed in more children than classical malnutrition. The country of Tunisia's urban population has shifted to processed flour breads. In Asia, in Shanghai, roads are today clogged with automobiles instead of the traditional bicycles. KFC opened a drive-through restaurant in Beijing in 2002. In all Chinese cities, obesity went from 4% in the 1970s to the 28% level in the year 2000. Did you get that? China now is becoming an industrialized nation. In all Chinese cities, obesity went from 4% in 1970 to 28% in 2000. In 30 years' time, from 4% to 28%. Well, that's pretty dramatic. You know, 4 to 28 is a 700% increase in 30 years. And it's because of industrialization. The people are moving from the countryside into the cities, and as they do that, they start cooking like we do. They start eating like we do. So this problem is growing around the world. It's not just us. It's everybody else. Now, in Oceania, that's out in the Pacific Islands, the shift to the Western diet and urban cooking fuels has produced the fattest people on Earth. In all situations where a country's or region's population shift from wood-burning substance or subsistence rural communities to urban communities, the people become obese. As rural subsistence farmers move into the city, they give up their historical practice of using their wood cooking and their wood heating ashes as culinary ashes and putting them into their gardens. More food is made available to the city dwellers, however. No one instructs them to take mineral supplements to make up for their loss of culinary and garden minerals. pica, cribbing, cravings, binge eating, and the munchies take over, and they're unwittingly sucked into the feedlot syndrome. All right, so now if you're fat and overweight, and let's place the blame where it belongs. It's on the foods that we eat. It's not you. It is the foods that you're eating. The foods are foodless foods. Adolf Steinbrom, you know, put the matter into perspective. Remember that story? When he tested 4,000 samples of hybrid corn, and they found that these open pollinated seeds. Now remember, modern agriculture, they use hybrid seeds. Hybrid. We don't put wood ashes on our soil for fertilizer. We put on chemical fertilizer. And there's a result that comes from that. We make these choices, whether they're conscious or unconscious. But the choices that we make come back to bite us in the butt later on. That's the bottom line. And the poorest people are the fattest people. And that's because they're buying the cheapest foods. And what are the cheapest foods? Carbohydrates. And so we're eating more and more Wonder Bread, pastas, pizza, and we're using white flour in the process. And even if you're eating whole wheat bread, you're probably still not getting the nutrition that you need. You're going to have to take supplements. So that's the bottom line. That's the story. Now, the common denominator for all of the world's movement toward a pandemic of obesity is in the fact the migration of rural peasant populations who had historically put the wood ashes from their cooking and heating fires into their gardens have moved to the urban centers that are driven by coal, steam, electricity, natural gas, and propane fuels for cooking and heating. This pattern of modernization and movement to obesity will be repeated over and over until we commit ourselves to replacing the lost raw materials given up by giving up wood as fuel. Deficiency of wood ash minerals equals pica and the resulting obesity. It's just that simple. It's no big mystery. Again, the simplicity of Wallach's writing and his conclusions, I think, are well worth the $19.95 or $18.95. Remember, the book is written by Joel Wallach. You can go to www.drjwallach.com. It's drjwallach.com. The phone number is 1-800-755-4656. Again, that's 1-800-755-4656 here in the U.S. and Canada. And if you want a copy of the book, you can go to bravenewbookstore.com. Bravenewbookstore.com. And you can just order it with your credit card. All right. I'm about out of time again. Run out of time when you're just getting started and having fun. So let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. And for more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up again. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.